Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Last week, a new brain research study conducted in Tulsa was released, which found that college football players who have experienced a concussion or have played the sport for many years have significantly smaller regions of the brain related to memory, the hippocampus, than do student athletes with fewer years of experience or who have never played. The hippocampus in certain athletes were up to 24% smaller than in non-athletes. The study published last week in the Journal of the American Medical Association is the most comprehensive to assess football's effects on college-age players' brains. The study was conducted at the University of Tulsa with the Laureate Institute for Brain Research. They took 50 TU football players, including 25 with a history of concussions, assessed for differences in hippocampal volume and cognitive performance. The test group also included 25 TU students who had never played football. Here to tell us what this study exactly means and what it doesn't mean necessarily is the lead researcher, Patrick Belgowan, a professor at both the Laureate Institute for Brain Research and the University of Tulsa, and David Polansky, the head athletic trainer at the University of Tulsa and co-author of the study. Patrick and David, thanks very much for joining us here on Studio Tulsa.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The reaction to your article in the Journal of the American Medical Association is already getting lots of press. First of all, let's talk about what your article actually researched. You took 50 TU football players, including 25 with a history of concussions, and then about a 25 group of non-student athletes as a control group. And what did you do exactly?
So we brought all these subjects into a scanner, an MRI scanner, and scanned their brains. And it's a type of scan that allows us to measure the sizes of different parts of their brain. And then we took them out and we sorted them and we give them random numbers so that we don't know which type of participant it is. And then what we did was there's software that automatically draws particular parts of the brain. And we looked at this one called the hippocampus that's involved in memory and emotion. And so we drew that and then we unblinded ourselves. So we took, we put them in the appropriate groups. And what we found was surprisingly that football players, regardless of concussion history, had smaller hippocampi than our control group. But concussion made that effect even larger. So if they had reported a history of concussion, they had an even smaller hippocampus.
Now, was that the intention going in to look at the hippocampus size, or was that a byproduct of the study of student athletes with concussion versus not versus a control group?
Yeah, the hippocampus was a region we were specifically looking at because if you look at retired football players, if you look at several other psychiatric diseases, which is the type of thing we study at the Laureate Institute for Brain Research, you see the hippocampus is smaller in major depressive disorder. It's smaller in CTE. Also, the hippocampus, there's research at, even here at the University of Tulsa that it's not us, but has shown that you can have increases in stressors can change the hippocampus size. So just life stressors in general can change hippocampus size. And so that's why we were interested in it.
David, from your point of view as an athletic trainer, I know another idea was to see how players recover from concussion to when it's safe to put them back out on athletic fields. Was that a goal as well?
That was when we started. Pat came to us and we discussed what we could be looking at. And my goal, long-range goal, is to try to find some kind of marker that we can look at to say, this is when a person is recovered, and or this is when a person is concussed. We have a definitive marker. Because right now the diagnosis is, it's all clinical. It's clinical evaluation that tells us whether they're concussed or not. And recovery, we do the same thing. We have a bunch of tests, but there's no real hard proof of that.
Like a brain scan.
Like a brain scan or an x-ray or anything else. So when Pat and the Laureate Institute came and wanted to work with us, we thought it'd be a great opportunity. And that's how I sold it to the players the first year that we did it, is look, it may not help you, but down the line, 10 years from now, maybe we'll be able to find something that will help your friends that are playing or your family members that keep playing. And so we thought it was a great opportunity. The University of Tulsa has been great about supporting us in this effort. And so it's been a good collaboration.
Now, there's been a lot of hype about, after this was published, about what this actually means for football players and people with brain injuries. What exactly did you find? You found a smaller hippocampus in your football player sample than those who that didn't play football long term, correct?
Yeah, that was the main finding. And then the thing that makes it most interesting, so it's a correlation, so we can't attribute.
It's not causal.
Right. We can't attribute or infer that football caused this difference. But one of the interesting things about the study is that it's a multidisciplinary. I mean, there's people from different areas doing different things, and that's really important in research. And so Dave's clinical experience, when we showed him the data at first, he hit on something that we had never thought of, and that was that, well, he'd noticed that his athletes are now starting to start playing football earlier, and maybe there's a relationship between how long they've played football and the size. And that's one of the most interesting, turned out to be, once we did that analysis, it turned out to be one of the most interesting findings. So we took the group of football players and we just asked them how long they'd been playing football in years, and then, plotted that against the size of their hippocampus. And it turned out that the guys who had played longer had smaller hippocampi. And so we had a range of age. I mean, some of them had only played for 7 years, and one had played for 18 years.
Wow.
So that's a long time to have played football.
It is a long time to play football. But you saw that in a smaller hippocampus size. Now, wasn't there a cognitive element to this study as well?
Well, part of what we do is with our kids is we always do a baseline neuropsych test. And then when they get concussed and as they agree to participate in the research, we have that data go to Pat. And Pat also does, down at Liber, they also repeat some of those testing and look at the cognitive memory and reaction time and everything else. That's something that's kind of interesting else is the reaction time deficit that the people that have played longer have. And that's something that, what can we do with this as a clinical person? What can I do with it? My thoughts are, it's not going to really change how we treat them once they have a concussion, but I'm going to look at possibly doing some reaction time training issues to see if we can retrain some of those skills to see if that helps them maybe get better at resisting concussions. I don't know, something like that.
Now, when you talk about reaction times, is that like seeing a stimulus and how quickly you can move or, your nerves tell your hand to push a button or something like that? Or
yeah, in the test that we use, there's a couple different measures of reaction time. One is simply touching a key when they see a red or a blue square. And so counting down from 25 to 1, how quickly they can do it, how quickly they match up different patterns on the screen.
Mm-hmm. And what about the memory parts of this? What sort of things are you doing on memory? Is it count to 40, or memorize these numbers?
The impact test is what we use. Neuropsych test is it's called impact, and what they do for word memory is flash. They flash words on the screen, and you have to remember which words they flash, and then they show you those words again. But they also show you an equal number of words that they didn't show you, and you're supposed to say whether you'd seen that before. So they do that right away. And then at the end of the test, it takes about 25 to 30 minutes to finish. The last things you're doing is they're showing you those words again. And so how long can you remember those words that they showed you? So that's how they do that.
Now, the hippocampus is the center for these sorts of activities. Is that correct?
Right. So the hippocampus is what most people attribute the hippocampus to is memory.
Mm-hmm.
There's a classic case of this patient in the late 50s who had both of his hippocampi removed. His name was H.M. He removed for epilepsy, and it turns out that he was unable to form any new memories from then on. So he didn't, he can learn procedures, so he could learn, to do things, but he wouldn't remember that he learned to do things. He didn't know his doctor's names and things like that. So it's important for memory, and that's why we actually hypothesized that if we saw a smaller hippocampus, we'd see the memory problems, and that we didn't see that relationship yet.
And the research into the hippocampus suggests that you'll see shrinkage, say, years prior to Alzheimer's or other sort of forms of dementia. Now, has that been proven?
Yes.
Or is that still a hypothesis or sort
well,
of?
In neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's, and the one that's related to sports that you see on sports networks all the time is called CTE or chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Those are pretty well documented, and the reason those are so well documented is that they look at tissue of deceased players, and they can look at cell death and identify what killed the cells, and so that's why it's so well defined. And we can't do that at this point with MR.
Yeah. Well, give us a sense of what you've sort of told us what this study has found. What is this study not found yet that relates to traumatic brain injury, concussions, and sports?
Well, that's the big that's actually the biggest finding is that we don't know anything. So, but it opens up. It shows that we need to do more research, and that's the number one thing. So what the University of Tulsa and LIBOR are planning to do right now, we're working together on writing a grant proposal to take this a very similar study and take it to younger athletes. So athletes in high school and really eighth grade is when they start playing high school football or sponsored by the school football. And look to see for similar effects in those athletes. And that brings up a lot of challenges in that they're also, like our TU players.
They're still growing.
Yeah, they're still in neurodevelopment. These kids are also in neurodevelopment. So we have to bring on some other experts. But I think right now, logistically, the most challenging part is, you know, the reason we got to do this study is because the TU athletic department committed. Dave, in particular, made this happen. We need the same sort of commitment from the athletes, parents, and schools locally because we need, you know, we can't figure this out if people don't come in.
Now, you brought up an interesting point. At what point is the hippocampus sort of at its mature size in the brain, or does it continue if you continue to make new neural pathways and you're learning new things or you're developing your memory? Does it continue to grow?
That's a question that's still being answered, but one of the guys who's agreed to start to collaborate with us, his name is Jay Geed, and he's at the National Institute of Mental Health right now. He's shown that in males, it's different between males and females, but in males, the hippocampus, which is kind of good for us, has gotten to its full size at puberty.
Okay.
Right. Which is
so that makes it
kinda,
great for
it's kind of good for us. Yes. That's actually because the problem is, you know, as you were alluding to, is that the cortex doesn't. It's not done yet.
Yeah.
And so even the guys we scan, their brains are not fully developed. Particularly their frontal lobes aren't completely developed yet.
I think I've always heard mid-20s.
I mean,
for a lot of that.
Right. So and our average age of the football players we scanned was 20.7. So they're 20 years old, and so it's hard to. Fortunately, I mean, we're searching in other areas, but that becomes the challenge of is it development or is it related to some sort of injury or, you know. And so really the research is trying to lead us to, we want to see developmental trajectory by looking at younger, and then we want to start to look at possible mechanism. Why is the hippocampus smaller? And it could be genetics, but it's hard from the data that's why Dave's hypothesis was so important because if it's genetics, it would suggest that people with smaller hippocampi decide to play football earlier. Not just that they play football, but they decide to do it earlier. So yeah. that doesn't seem the most parsimonious or simplest answer. So another one we're doing is we're bringing in the University of Oklahoma, Tulsa. There's a researcher named Kent Teague who's helping us look at inflammation. And so there's a hypothesis that the body's inflammation is getting into the brain through maybe disruption of this sort of filter that filters between the brain and the body. And that's dysregulating things in the brain and starts to kill the hippocampus or starts to shrink the hippocampus.
And that's really interesting. And David, as you well know, inflammation is a part of all sports injuries and actually the act of playing sports, the actually of weightlifting and working out. There's inflammation as a part of the breaking down of the muscle and rebuilding.
Yeah. So every athlete we have has that chronic inflammation, or they're in that inflamed state almost all the time, whether they're a football player or a cross-country runner or a track runner or anything else, because they are constantly working out, you know, 52 weeks a year. So that's the difficult part about investigating that study, and we need to try to – we're working to try to get it set up. And all of our athletes have been very good about volunteering their time and being a part of this. You know, we've had – obviously, football was the main thrust early, but now we've gotten some other kids to go down and get scanned and be part of the study. Some non-contact athletes, some soccer players. So we're trying to broaden the participation. But again, it's the younger kids. We can get the message out to the parents of this is out there. If you want to help us investigate, you know, that would be a great thing to help us see what this study really means.
My guests today are Patrick Belgowan, a professor at the Laureate Institute for Brain Research and at the University of Tulsa, and the lead researcher for this article in the Journal of the American Medical Association. David Polansky, who is also a co-author of the study, and he's the head athletic trainer at the University of Tulsa. They recently published their research on the relationship of collegiate football experience and concussion with hippocampal volume and cognitive outcomes, which is a mouthful. But it basically says you found these smaller hippocampus in athletes that played football for a long time, and for those with concussions, even smaller hippocampuses. Now, how does this study correlate with other sports-related head injuries? I'm thinking, and you know, in sports like boxing, hockey, maybe soccer, have there been studies done on other sports? It sounds like you're trying to bring that in this next phase.
Yeah. So one of the keys is, I mean, this paper was on football players, and that's because football players are abundant in Oklahoma.
But I'm not too many hockey players.
Yeah, right. I'm from Minnesota originally, so there it probably would have been a hockey study. And there's a whole variety of basic, 'cause the message is, there's sort of this new term coming out. Well, it's newer to me. It's probably not as new to Dave, but where they call it collision sports. And the collision sports go beyond contact sports, in that the goal of the sport is to actually, you know, make contact with the other player.
Right.
So that's hockey and
boxing.
Boxing and lacrosse. And, I mean, it's a lot of different sports. And so a lot of the research right now is being focused on football, but there's also – on the East Coast, you start to see this huge sort of hockey, this similar findings in hockey. And then across the pond, you see rugby is starting to get a lot of research and a lot of focus on it, particularly because of the way that they have neck strain too. So there's a lot of interest in the relationship between neck strain and head injuries.
I was really interested in this because I know this is just a first step, but one of the things I was really interested in is, are you going to try to follow these players after the football career ends to see if there's changes to the hippocampus once they give up playing football? Because that's the other thing. I don't know. Is there much in the regenerative properties of the hippocampus? Do we know much about that?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about the hippocampus, is that it was actually the first region in humans that they figured out. Because, I mean, as I was going throughout college, even, they said, which was pretty long ago, I guess, but they were saying that, you know, human, you don't make new neurons. But that turned out to be completely wrong. And one of the first places they found it is the hippocampus. And so the hippocampus has a lot of, they call it neurogenesis, or, you know, creating neurons. And that's why we're also interested in inflammation, because inflammation, if it gets into the brain, can mess up that creation of new neurons. And so, you know, that it's a challenge to figure out. I mean, our next challenge is to figure out, can these guys recover? And so we'd love to bring them back. So I think that's another advantage of being at the University of Tulsa, because we probably have a slightly higher percentage of, you know, at least regionally local players. Fewer come from, you know, East Coast or West Coast, where it'd be really hard to get them to come back, be really expensive.
A lot of them have roots in Oklahoma or Texas.
Or Texas or Arkansas or Kansas. Mm-hmm. So it would be nice to have them come back.
Yeah. David, how are you using this, even just the, I know it, at the very beginning of this study, it was about creating a baseline when your athletes come to the University of Tulsa. You can see differences as they have a concussion or a brain injury of some sort, or jolts and things like that. Is this something you're using in your practice for your athletes?
Well, right now, it's hard to transfer some of this stuff into clinical usage. You know, I think it's a matter of technique. We do focus, and our coaches do a good job of making sure our kids use proper technique, and that's a big thing for me is what can we do to prevent concussions? We talk about researching what concussions do. I'd love to be able to figure out a way to prevent them, and I think right now that focus is on the prevention side of things, is on technique, tackling technique. There's a whole program USA Football has that teaches youth football on youth coaches how to teach tackling, and I think that's a great start. Minimizing the amount of contact in practices is kind of a trend growing across the country, you know, and the NCAA put in some certain rules a few years ago to limit the amount of contact, you know, in terms of 2 days. You can only do it every other day after the first 5 days. So that trend is growing, and I think people are seeing good success when they do practice tackling a little bit during the week, but not overkill. And so I think that's how we try to, and if we can educate our coaches in the youth and above to, you know, yeah, they need to practice a little bit, but it's got to be good technique. So that's kind of how we're approaching, you know, our student athletes. I'm looking forward to them getting back on campus in a week and sharing some of this information with them. The kids that took part are going to be interested to find out. Hopefully we're not going to scare them with it, because there's nothing to be scared about right now. We don't know what the final results are of it long term. So that's what we got to work on.
Yeah, I want to ask about the caveats of this study, because you're going to be talking to athletes coming back in a week. And from what I can see around the web and reporters who are writing about this, is saying smaller hippocampus, memory loss, concussions. And I'm sure that's it's not that easily in that pat in what you've found so far.
Yeah, I mean, we can't make these inferences, and so one of my fears is always that people are gonna, and I've seen it also, is that they're saying, well, here's evidence that football is bad, and we don't know that from these data. These data just show in this particular group, this sample, that they had smaller hippocampi than this other group. And so that's, that just points, for me, that points us to, well, we need to find out more. And if we can find out more that describes what is happening, that's going to tell us what the features are, the factors that are causing this or that may be causing this, and then we can get to where Dave wants to get to, which is how do you intervene then? Maybe what we can do is we can find out that the hippocampus is smaller because when they get a concussion, they come back too early. Or there's a particular type of inflammation, a drug that we could give them that would help decrease the bad inflammation and keep the good inflammation. That's where we want to get to, because imaging is expensive, and it's, never going to be a great solution for the University of Tulsa might be able to do something like that. NFL could definitely do that. But, INFC football player teams are not going to be able to scan their kids and see if they have a concussion.
A Class B high school.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a practical solution. It's just a way to get at what's happening.
Now, is that scanning idea something that you would use, or do you feel like your cognitive sort of tests that you do on athletes are going to be a far better determinant of whether an athlete's ready to go back on the field?
Right now, all the testing we do is going to be much better, because we can't infer from what we've done so far that this MRI looks like this and this guy still is concussed. It's interesting when we send kids out, and we don't get the results real time, because we don't want to be we can't make judgments on what the MRI looks like. But it's interesting to look at it and say, well, this guy was completely, from our evaluations, the doctor's evaluations, was healed and back and ready to go. And this is what his scan looked like day one. And this is what his scan looked like day 30 after his injury. And he's back playing. And so eventually, can we, get to something like that? Maybe. But like you said, right now, it's so expensive. And so we need to find a different method to do that, that everybody can use. So the best practices right now are to use all of the, use a balance test, use a neuropsych test, use some memory testing, use a symptom checklist to see what your symptoms are. Those are the best methods currently to tell when somebody's ready to go back.
Well, it sounds like inflammation is going to be an area that you focus on too. This idea that inflammation affects the size. How do you get to the basis of something like that, especially with athletes? Because there's a level of inflammation, whether they're injured or not, just from physical exertion and breakdown of muscles and lactic acid and all that sort of stuff.
Right, right. There's particular pathways that might be most interesting, and so that's what we'll look at. There's a lot of challenges, because we also have to infer that, that it's getting into the brain, and that's that barrier. So at some point it would be nice to do. You can actually do scans to look at whether there's things can cross the blood brain. It's called the blood brain barrier.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the challenge of inflammation, what we really need to do is to work on Dave, because we get these guys to give us some cerebral spinal fluid.
Yeah, there you go. Lumbar punctures.
Yeah. That's going to be the real challenge, right? I mean, if we can get. We can get that's really. I'm fine. I guess I'm really challenging Dave now to get these guys to give us lumbar punctures.
Yeah, please.
During the football season, I'm sure that'll be really popular. But that's really the that's all right. That's the ultimate test of the inflammation inside the brain, which is kind of what we're interested in. And clearly, that you know, clearly the football players aren't going to do it because who wants a lumbar puncture when you're playing football during a season in particular? So there will have to be other methods that we get around to try to look at that.
Well, if you can take us down the road and say the results of what you found here are acted on and larger studies and these results are maybe confirmed in these sort of contact sports, even more contact, but basically the idea of, you know, head-to-head contact or something to the head contact in the sports. And if that is confirmed over time, what does this mean for contact sports? The death of football, that just seems highly unlikely for me. But redesigning equipment, alter rules, what do you think?
I see it being we alter rules. The NFL altered a rule based on concussion rates with kickoffs. And I see that being the most the easiest and probably best way to affect this problem. Equipment, you know, I don't know if you can develop a helmet, something you wear on the outside of your skull to stop the shaking of the brain inside your skull. I'm not an engineer. Maybe hopefully there's somebody out there that's can get it done, but I can't see how. I mean, the brain shakes when it floats inside the skull, and when you hit something, it shakes. So maybe we can get to that down the line, but I think it's going to be rule changes. Or if this is carried out down the line and it does show the length of time, that was the thing that I'm seeing guys now that are playing football for 12 years, 13 years, when they show up to me. And it's full contact tackle football. Now, do we have to do something at a younger age? Do we have to limit the number of contact practices they have? Do we have to limit contact totally up to a certain point? I don't know, but I think that's where down the line where we would go before we would outlaw the sport. I don't think that's going to be feasible. I don't want to do that. I love the sport. Played it and when I was growing up in high school and everything, and it was a great experience, taught me a lot. So I don't want to get rid of the sport. I just want kids that are playing it to be as safe as possible. And when and if they do get a concussion, to be able to better treat that, to make sure that when they go back, they're not worried that they're going to get another one or another one. And that's the big thing for me and people in my profession.
All right. Well, Patrick Bilgowan, David Polansky, thanks very much for joining us. Good luck with your research.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Patrick Bilgowan and David Polansky are the co-authors of a new brain research study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Bilgowan is the lead researcher and a professor at both the Laureate Institute for Brain Research and the University of Tulsa. David Polansky, the head athletic trainer at the University of Tulsa and a co-author of the study. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.